I think it is clear to believe in the power of ideas.
Fresh thinking for the Manhattan Institute.
If I could have your attention, please, I think we'll get started. Good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. I'm Larry Mohn, president of the Manhattan Institute. Just first order of business, I'll give you a moment or two to shut off the cell phones, right? So that we can, I know that can be a problem sometimes. I have a brief task here. It's my pleasure to offer a brief introduction for Dick Schmelk, a longtime supporter of the Institute, who is responsible for orchestrating today's event. Dick is a founding partner of the CAI private equity firm. Previously, he worked at Salomon Brothers, where he played a key role in helping the company become a leading investment banking firm. Throughout his career, Dick has been extensively involved in U.S.-Canadian financial matters. He has received numerous awards from the Canadian government and honorary degrees from Canadian universities for his work. Dick's real passion, however, is Catholic charity. He's an honorary member of the National Board of Covenant House and is the chairman of the Development Committee of the Inner City Scholarship Endowment Fund of the Archdiocese of New York. In 2006, Pope Benedict named him Knight of the Order of St. Gregory the Great for his efforts on behalf of the Catholic Church. Please join me in welcoming Dick Schmelk.
Thank you, Larry. I'm really better known as a tennis player than all those things you mentioned. Honored guests, ladies and gentlemen, today I have the pleasure of presenting to you His Excellency Timothy Michael Dolan, Archbishop of New York. Pope Benedict XVI named Archbishop Dolan to the Archdiocese on February 23rd, 2009. He was formally installed April 15th of 2009. The Archbishop ministers to 2.5 million Catholics throughout the Archdiocese, and in that role has a wide range of responsibilities that include the management of 375 parishes, 279 schools serving 84,000 students, and also 107 of those are schools that are located in the poorest parts of the city. The Archbishop is also charged with the management of Catholic Charities, which serves 5,300,000 meals a year in parishes and communities, food programs, provides affordable housing for 2,500 families, safe homes for 6,400 children, critically needed social services to 26,000 individuals, and so much more. The Archbishop also serves as chairman of Catholic Relief Services. I recently received a report on Catholic Relief Services efforts in Haiti. It's quite impressive, some $200 million spent, 85,000 plus people receiving temporary shelter, 728,000 people receiving food rations, in addition, substantial aid for sanitation, medical care, various health services, cash for work, seeds for the planting season, education, and orphanages. This illustrates the breadth of the Archbishop's responsibilities. Cardinal Egan worked tirelessly to support inner city schools serving the poor and has passed the mission on to Archbishop Dolan. The Archbishop will speak today on the inner city schools of the Archdiocese. There is no more impressive or important task that both men will tell you an education of our youth. I've served on the endowment for any inner city education for about 15 years. The endowment was begun by Russ Carson and the late Nick Forsman and the late Les Quick. Headed today by Russ, we share our efforts with the Inner City Scholarship Fund, led by Peter Grauer, and the Patrons Program, founded by Peter Planigan and also Bill Finneran today. I'm pleased to say we have received strong financial support over the years from Catholics and non-Catholics alike. We need more help, and to use a Broadway theater line, additional angels are requested. Now it is my privilege and my honor to present His Excellency Timothy Michael Dolan, Archbishop of New York.
Thank you very much.
Sir Richard, thank you for that gracious introduction. And Larry, thanks to you and the Manhattan Institute for your extraordinarily thoughtful invitation and warm welcome this beautiful spring afternoon. When the invitation first came in to come to the Manhattan Institute, being new in this great city, I didn't know what it was. And I said to my secretary, I'd be much more inclined to accept an invitation from the Martini Institute. However, now that I've had the chance to study your goals, and your thoughtful invitation prompted me to do that, it's very clear, everybody, that there's a lot in your mission that is very consonant with the church's mission and vision for world and culture. So I relish very much being with you, and I hope, please God, through your kindness, that perhaps it's not the last time. I have a passion about the topic that you're about to hear me speak about, Catholic education, about the only topic that perhaps would have rivaled my enthusiasm for the topic that you've asked me to address would have been had you asked me to speak about the 1964 World Series. When I was a 14-year-old boy growing up in St. Louis and the Cardinals took the Yankees in 7 games. That would not have been too politically correct in this audience today, so thank you for asking me to speak about Catholic education, a topic for which I have immense exuberance that I hope becomes quickly obvious. Can I start? Dick, you were kind enough to refer to my role as president of Catholic Relief Services. About 2 years ago, I had the pleasure of traveling on a fact-finding mission with Catholic Relief Services to Ethiopia, where we have a considerable outreach program. And while there, as part of the mission, we were received by the president of Ethiopia, President Walda Gorgias, I think you pronounce it. My Ethiopian is not too good. But at the end of it, he called me aside, and he said, Reverend, perhaps you could help me. And I said, Mr. President, how can we? Now here I'm thinking Catholic Relief Services, they're on the brink of famine. Is he going to ask for perhaps more food? Is there something maybe I could do when I go back home as far as publicity? Or is he going to ask for more medication or more people with Catholic Relief Services to come over and work? He says to me, is there any chance that the Catholic Church of the United States could open up schools in Ethiopia? He says, now, he's not a Catholic, and only 1% of Ethiopia's population is Catholic, all right? And there are Catholic schools there that he knew about. He was asking us to do more of them. And I said to him, Mr. President, I said, thank you for your confidence, and it's certainly something I'll do my best to think about. But I said, you're not a Catholic. Less than 1% of your people are Catholic. You have towering needs that we've just spoken about in our excellent reception that you so kindly hosted for us. I said, could you help me understand why the one thing that you feel is most needed by the church, or that the church can do for you, is schools and education? And he looked me in the eyes and he said, because nobody does it better than the Catholic Church. Now, I was so honored and flattered to hear that. But in a way, I suppose I shouldn't be surprised. And in a way, I already sense that I'm preaching to the choir, because so many of you would agree with that statement. In a matter of days, we Catholics are going to celebrate the Feast of the Ascension, 40 days after Easter, when Jesus returned to his Father in heaven. His last words on earth were, go teach. And for 2,000 years, the church has been trying its best to do that. If we believe historians, who are not even believers, like Will and Ariel Durant, it is the Catholic Church, through its educational initiatives, that kept the corpus of Western learning and civilization alive and passed it on to future generations. It's the Catholic Church that gave us the very word school And it's the Catholic Church, of course, that founded the very first universities. So I suppose I should not be surprised that here in the city that John Paul the Great called the capital of the world, you would ask the Archbishop of New York to speak about Catholic education. And I sure hope you're not surprised that I'm delighted and grateful for the chance. Could we look real quick at the actual purposes of Catholic education, all right? The first and most important purpose of a Catholic education is to form the whole person. That we mean body, mind, and soul, intellectually, spiritually, morally, physically, and mentally, spiritually, all right? So in our Catholic ethos, everybody, that means necessarily an encounter with the Spirit, the message, and the teachings of Jesus Christ. As St. Irenaeus said, the glory of God is man fully alive. So when one takes an integrated approach, taking in mind, soul, and body, we believe that that's the best and most effective recipe for quality, first-rate education. The second purpose of Catholic education is simply to provide the best academic formation possible for all students, enabling them to become virtuous, productive, reliable citizens in today's world. And the third purpose of Catholic education is to continue to transform our society. We don't just grant degrees or graduate classes, we form character, and we empower future leaders to be, in the words of Jesus, lights to the world and salt to the earth. So things like character, responsibility, initiative, courtesy, discipline, reliability, all are key words in our Catholic chemistry of education. St. Ignatius Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, some of the premier educators in history, simply said, we're in the business of forming men for others. Well, Catholic schools are in the business of forming young boys and young girls to be men and women for others, to be leaders in society, culture, family, business, and politics. Catholic education, as you well know, because most of you have been here a lot longer than I have been a hallmark of the Catholic Church and the New York landscape for centuries. The first Catholic school in the United States dates back to 1727, the Ursuline Academy in New Orleans, which is still functioning. Here in the New York area, they've been around for 200 years, decades before what we now call public schools. I don't think, because something tells me I'm preaching to the choir this afternoon, I don't think I need to go through many statistics to kind of share with you the effectiveness and the expanse of Catholic education. But let me just kind of sketch for you some of the statistics that we're talking about. You know, the Archdiocese of New York spans the southern counties of New York State, including the urban boroughs of Manhattan, the Bronx, and Staten Island. We currently educate let me give you the statistics. We got 61,000 students in Catholic colleges and universities. We've got 20, this is just within the Archdiocese. We've got 29,000 in our high school. We've got 59,000 in our grade schools, all right? Altogether, then, about 150,000 young people under the umbrella of Catholic education. We're talking mainly this afternoon, though, about our Catholic elementary and high schools, which means about 85,000 children. What we're most interested in this afternoon, as Dick mentioned, is our 105 inner city Catholic schools in the New York City area with approximately 35,000 students. Nearly 40% of these inner city students are non-Catholic. As the old saying goes, Peter just quoted it at the table, we don't educate kids because they're Catholics, we educate kids because we are. We've never asked for a baptismal certificate at the door. 94% of our children are of minority populations. More than two-thirds live near or below the federal poverty line. Get this, more than 98% of our inner city high school seniors graduate, and 96 of these graduates go on to colleges and universities. So, if we have a child who enters a kindergarten Catholic school, 98% of them will go on and graduate from high school. By the way, I'm grateful to one of your own fellows of the Manhattan Institute, Saul Stern, for some of those excellent statistics. And the final one is another dazzling one that has recently received press again, is that the test scores in our Catholic schools are higher than in the government schools, and the poorer the area, the better our test scores compare in relationship to the government schools. It's estimated, everybody, that the Catholic schools of the state of New York save the state of New York $3.6 billion annually. As we bishops tried to make our case, as we do every year, when we went up to Albany about 6 weeks ago for our annual legislative day at the Capitol in company with about 3,000 Catholic, mostly young people from around the state, we're not there, we said to the governor, we said to our legislators, we're not here asking for money, we're here to save you money. Because nothing saves the state budget when it comes to education more than our Catholic schools. When you take in the Diocese of Brooklyn, which is Queens and Kings County, 113,000 children in grade school save, now this is just in the New York metropolitan area alone, $1.9 billion annually or save the public tax rolls. Something to celebrate. Can I emphasize right about now, and I hope this goes without saying, but I want to go on record as saying it, we who have the privilege of administering and supporting and trying to strengthen our Catholic schools, we are not anti-public school. From a selfish point of view, I've got to be very pro-public school, because guess what? 2/3 of my kids are in public schools, all right? And as a community leader, and I try to take that aspect of my responsibility very seriously, I want strong public schools, and I rejoice, everybody, that they're getting better. And I'd like to believe that one of the reasons they're getting better is because we also have a strong private school system in the state of New York, and the strongest part of that being our Catholic schools, which keep a monopoly from farming, because we all know that a monopoly rarely works and is usually inefficient and becomes very bloated. It's not about who does it in the long run. It's really about our kids, right? And how we can educate them best. And all we're saying is we've been doing it a long time. We love doing it. We're told we do it very well, and we want to keep doing it. And we're not anti anybody. We're simply pro children. We're pro students. What I've tried to do, everybody, is give you a quick 5-minute sketch of the good news. And I could go on forever just about the good news in Catholic schools. The good news in our Catholic schools. Nobody does it better. It's a formation of the whole person, soul, mind, and body. We want to transform society by forming virtuous leaders. They are dramatically effective. As one of our contributors said to me recently, who describes himself as an atheist, he said, I don't care what you teach about religion. All I know is that your schools work, and I want to support them and make them stronger. And they are a boost to all of our children. That's the good news about Catholic education. I wish I could stop there and unpop the champagne corks and we could have one big toast to our Catholic school. But there's also chilling news. There's also news that is not the best. And to be blunt with you, we are in somewhat of a critical posture now when it comes to our Catholic schools. Can I mention a couple of the things that really trouble us and then get to the last part of my talk, which is namely a strategic plan that we're on the brink of launching within the Archdiocese that I hope is going to be a very daring, creative approach to these problems. One of the big problems we got, everybody, is declining enrollment. Yes, there's demographic reasons for that. Yes, there are cost reasons for that. And simply put, a lot of our parents can't afford our schools. Yes, there's still the tsunami effect for us as Catholics of coming to grip with the fact that we've no longer got a dedicated group of men and women religious, our sisters and brothers, who used to run our schools with not only a dynamism and a professionalism and an intensity in their vocation, but who did it for next to nothing. All of those kind of combined together to bring about escalating costs and declining in enrollment. I gotta be blunt with you too. We're worried a little bit about our test scores. While they still are higher than the other schools, the gap is narrowing. And we wanna be very attentive to that. And that's a challenge that we are facing. So you all know what we've got on the scene is that it seems gradually we are slowly amputating our Catholic schools. And about this time of the year, you hear the bad news in every area of the country. Thanks be to God, it's not as dramatic here in New York as in other places, but we faced a couple ourselves of certain of our schools are closing. Such that now, everybody, we're at a crisis where people, legitimate people who are intense in their support of our schools, are wondering, can they continue? So in other words, we're at a kairos moment, to use a biblical term, a time when we got to make some decisions. And we can either say, let's just do business as usual. We'll do our best and we'll keep afloat and we'll kind of go on like this and we're going to have to close some every year and admit that we just can't keep up. Or are we going to get daring? Are we going to get creative? Are we going to get bold? My message, I think my major message to all of you this afternoon is we simply cannot do business as usual. To do business as usual, it is, in my mind, to take the hospice approach to Catholic schools, which I am afraid many of us bishops, priests, and leaders in Catholic schools have subconsciously bought into. What do I mean by the hospice approach? By the hospice approach, I mean that many of us have bought into the mentality that Catholic schools are gradually dying. And that the best thing we can do is prolong their death and make it as comfortable as possible. I refuse to buy into the hospice mentality, although I think that is presently hypnotized the culture of Catholic leadership in our nation. We must recover the dare. We must rediscover a sense of boldness. We've got to get dramatic. We've got to start with some fresh thinking, and we've got to dare our people to come through for an initiative, Catholic education, that they tell us almost unanimously is one of the greatest services that the Catholic Church in the United States performs. Now, what I'm going to propose this afternoon is that our upcoming Pathways to Excellence, our strategic initiative, is a great way to do that, all right? And please God, in the very near future, you're going to see this strategic initiative in all its detail. It's going to call for some internal and external enhancements. It's going to be very big on the recruitment, training, and retention of quality principals. Dr. Tim McNiff, who's here today, our excellent superintendent of schools, often tells me, Archbishop, more and more I feel that the greatest priority of my work is to find, to train, to keep our principals. Because if you've got a first-class principal, you've got a first-class school. We're blessed with the Curran Principal Academy, thanks to Peter Flanagan and his son, that is already working in collaboration with the Diocese of Brooklyn, the Archdiocese of New York, and the Diocese of Brooklyn, to prepare some of our most promising teachers to take the helm at our inner city elementary schools. Secondly, it's going to propose that we do something that seems to be common sense that we really haven't been up till now, and that's enter into partnership with our Catholic colleges and universities. See, unfortunately, very often we Catholics don't have our act together. so that we don't ask our universities to work with our high schools or our high schools to work with our grade schools. We got to get serious about that. And then we got to take a clean look at questions of governance. See, and this could get me in trouble, but I wonder if we, if somebody somewhere, and I'm prepared to do it, has got to ask the question whether the parochial model of Catholic education is the best and most realistic. You know now that most of our schools are parochial. That means the pastor's in charge. It is run by one parish. More and more pastors, more and more parents, more and more principals are telling me, Archbishop, those days are over. We need a communal embrace of the Catholic educational apostolate, and we need a shared responsibility for recruitment, maintenance, and subsidies of our schools. So we're going to have to get serious about regional models. We're going to have to get intense in our collaborative initiatives. And I'm sad to bring it up, there's difficult decisions above in the allocation of, there's difficult decisions ahead in delicate allocation of resources to strengthen our overall system that we're probably going, some schools are going to have to close. Not to cut away further at Catholic education, but in the long run to strengthen all of them. We have a term borrowed from Jesus when he speaks about the best way to get a vine to grow is sometimes to prune it. And when you prune it, the whole vine is going to expand. We all know some schools are probably have to close. You're familiar right now. You could tell me where you've got two, sometimes three schools in one of our neighborhoods that are probably all within a 12-block area. All three are struggling. All three are at a third to a half capacity. It makes all the sense in the world to combine them into one vibrant school. We cannot resort to a pedagogical Darwinism where we just sit back and watch the weaker species go extinct. The question is not whether we're going to have to close some schools. The question is how. And a very sensitive part of our strategic plan is that we can't do it from the top down. We have got to collaborate with our stakeholders, with our parents, with our parishes, with our pastors, with our principals, with our parishioners, with our civic leaders and our business leaders who have been so extraordinarily generous to us to help us figure out the best way to bring some schools together so that we may have fewer, but we've got vibrant ones, and in the long run, Dr. McNiff keeps saying, our goal is to get our numbers up to 100,000 children in our Catholic elementary schools. So this isn't a surrender, folks. This isn't waving the white flag. This is a way to strengthen and expand our Catholic schools. Another new area that you're going to see in this, and do we ever got to get our act together in this one, is an outreach to Latinos. You all know the statistics in our city, to say nothing of our church. By the year 2030, 40% of American Catholics will be Latinos. Now, chilling number, only 4% of Latino children go to Catholic schools. Why that is the case? Probably mostly money. There's also some cultural things here. I'm thrilled today, as part of our strategic plan, to let you know that the University of Notre Dame has chosen the Archdiocese of New York for a pilot project to increase enrollment among Latinos in our Catholic schools by only 2%. Obviously a first step, all right? But if we can increase it up to 6% of the population, we're going to have a great increase in the number of the children being served in our excellent inner city Catholic schools. Now, everybody asks, Archbishop, up till now you haven't talked about the major challenge to our Catholic schools, and that's money. We all know that, all right? That is a big part of the strategic plan, the pathways to excellence. you're going to read that the strategic plan is emphasizing giving a shot of steroids to the excellent present commitment that that already goes on in this marvelous community, thanks to so many of you in this room right now. We've got organizations such as the Inner City Scholarship Fund, the Endowment for Inner City Education, the Patrons Program, the Student Sponsor Partners, the Children's Scholarship Fund. We've got people in this room like Peter Flanagan and his son Bob, and we've got Jim Healy with the Student Sponsor Partners. We've got Darla with the Children's Scholarship Fund. We've got Russ and Judy Carson, the Endowment for Inner City Education. We got Peter Grauer of the Inner City Scholarship Fund. These are brilliant examples, and this New York community, thanks to you, is held up as a light to the rest of the country, where the civic, business, and philanthropic community are coming together to make major investments in the initiative that they feel is most beneficial for the community, namely the Catholic schools in inner city. To steroid that up, to get the good news out, is going to be a major part of our strategic initiative. And it's not going to stop there. If you figure that we've got to make some strategic decisions about consolidations and mergers, that means we're going to have some buildings freed up throughout New York. The strategic plan will say that those buildings, those school buildings that are no longer going to be used, are going to be rented or sold. And you all know a lot more about real estate than I do. That can bring in a considerable amount of money. That money is to be kept to support other schools, all right? So that would give the Archdiocese a greater share of resources to roll back into our pruned, stronger, more expanded school system. Secondly, it's going to save, right now, the Archdiocese of New York annually gives $28 million a year to our Catholic schools in need. Now that's obviously above and beyond what the Catholic people in the parishes are doing. This is diocesan allotment. When we are able to make reasonable decisions about bringing our schools together in stronger consolidations, that's going to free up more money that then we can reinvest in schools. And the way the Pathways to Excellence suggests and recommends doing that is through scholarships. The answer, of course, is to get more paying customers into our schools. Any pastor or principal, when I go visit, and I try at least once a week to get to one of our wonderful schools, the thing they will always say to me is, "Archbishop, if I had 24 more kids, we'd be making it. If I had 24 more kids, we wouldn't be in the urgent situation as they are." Well, with this money saved, we should, God willing, be able to provide the scholarships to get them their 24 or 36 more children. And that, of course, helps everybody, the parishes, the schools, and most of all, our beloved kids who are then able to attend one of these excellent schools. Let me just close, because I was told that a lady would start jumping up and down and waving her hands and telling me that I've spoken too long, to which I said, "I'm used to that at every Sunday Mass, and I don't pay a bit of attention," all right? The University of Notre Dame, Dr. McNiff and Darla was there. Some of you were there last week. We had an excellent meeting with them for about this Latino program and about more accessibility for our Catholic schools. They have an excellent quote when they speak about the future of Catholic schools. Let me read it to you. "To those who wonder how we can afford to make the investment necessary to sustain, strengthen, and expand Catholic schools, we respond by turning the question on its head. How can we afford not to make this investment? Our future depends on it more than we may suspect. Parishes don't subsidize schools. Parishes invest in them. Catholic schools exist because of the community. Catholic schools exist because of people with a passionate interest in our children and in our future, people like you. And please God, our Pathways to Excellence, our new strategic plans to reengage the community in our schools, is going to succeed as Catholic schools have in the past. Back in the 1840s, one of my predecessors, Archbishop John Hughes, I'm wearing his pectoral cross today. He was the first Archbishop of New York, not the first bishop, but the first Archbishop, a very colorful figure. You talk about somebody that faced a critical moment in the schools, and he had to say, should I just kind of let it go and be passive and let's with schools that can make it fine, or should I be daring, should I be bold, should I challenge our school to know what we, our people to do what we all know is best for our children, for our culture, for our society, for the community that we love, and for our church, namely, to keep a strong Catholic school, a strong system of Catholic schools. He chose the path of daring and hope and initiative. I'm hoping that 150 years from now, somebody can say the same about one of his successors, Timothy Dolan. I'm so grateful that my predecessors, and especially when it comes to our Catholic schools in the inner city, Cardinal Cook, Cardinal O'Connor, and Cardinal Egan, have been great pathfinders when it comes to creative ways to support our schools. I don't want to let their legacy down. I don't want to let you down. I don't want to let our children down, because what always haunts me is not the excellent statistics, not what I know to be the facts, that our Catholic schools darn it work. What always haunts me is the parents and the kids and the teachers who say to me time after time after time, on sidewalks, in schools, in churches, in restaurants, Archbishop, thanks for our Catholic schools. Please keep them going. From the president of Ethiopia to the single Latino in South Bronx, they know that nobody does it better. Thanks for inviting me. Thanks especially for your interest and attention. It's been a genuine honor to be with such a group of distinguished leaders like you. You've made me feel very much at home, and I appreciate that. Howard, you're going to, you told me you should have a reader. There are none. Did I go too long? Were we all right?
Okay.
You know, this is the first time I've given a long talk and haven't concluded by saying today there'll be a second collection. This is so.
Kindly agreed to, and if you would not mind waiting for the microphone, identifying yourself, and keeping your question brief, that would be really good. And let me start. Let me start on the left here. Please wait for the microphone.
You're not biased to the left, are you?
Not at all.
Definitely. Thank you. Candace DeRussi, National Review Online.
Hi,
your
Candace.
Excellency. You mentioned slippage in test scores. What would be the reasons for this? Is there something pedagogical that's going on that's being done differently, or what would you,
comment? That in itself is one of the goals of our strategic plan, to discover the reason. We've got some hunches, because our slippage, and again, I don't want to overemphasize this, but I owe it to you to be candid. It's something we're worried about. The slippage seems to occur, Dr. McNiff, in the area of science and math. And we're kind of wondering, Candace, if we're able to keep up with the bells and whistles that are going on everywhere else. And if, you know, one of the genius of Catholic schools is, of course, in what we call a traditional classical liberal arts education. And we're wondering if we've been caught a little off guard in not keeping up with the technological progress that is essential today, especially for academic formation in science and math. Again, our test scores are good there, they're even better, but the slippage is a little more obvious there. And darn it, we don't want to be passive. We don't want to say, well, let's wait another year and see if this is passive. A great part of the Pathways to Excellence is that it is very proactive. We don't wait. We parachute in. Part of the Pathways of Excellence is that the Archdiocese, the Archdiocesan School Office, will have a platoon of experts to parachute in if we see a school that the test scores are showing some slippage, and to do something about it right now. And actually, Dr. McNiff has said that the most recent advances tell us that the best thing you can do is not parachute in experts to help the children, but to help the teachers. And so we want to get on that right away. Thanks for the question, Candace. Oh, thanks.
Archbishop, I'm Michael Myers.
Hi, Michael.
New York Civil Rights Coalition. My question to you is, because I didn't hear the name at all in your presentation, of Jesus. So my question is, in terms of Catholic schooling and Catholic education, does it work because of the small C or the capital C in Catholic, in terms of the teaching of Jesus?
Thanks.
And is the crisis, and is the diminution of Catholic schools, the closing of them, et cetera, is it a reflection of the larger crisis in society over Catholicism, in a sense that people are concerned about religious dogma and concerned about the social crises around the Catholic Church?
Excellent question, Michael, and I appreciate you asking it. I think I did mention the name of Jesus, because purposely at the beginning, when I spoke about the Catholic ethos of forming the whole person, soul, mind, and body, in the Catholic ethos, that cannot be done without an introduction to the spirit, teaching, and message of Jesus Christ. So I'm hoping I did. You're right, though, in that I didn't come down strong on that. That's a good question. Paradoxically, the people that most encourage us to hype up the religious dimension, the climate of faith in our schools, would be the non-Catholics. They tell us that what attracts them to our schools is the Catholic climate, and they want their children to benefit from that. Now, they don't want us to proselytize. That's a technical word that means there's sort of an energetic, in-your-face conversion mode. They don't like that, and they appreciate the fact that an essential part of the Catholic faith happens to be a respect for religious freedom and a reverence for every religious belief, so that's always respected in a Catholic school. But they love the Catholic dimension. It's very interesting. About 20 years ago, if you remember the great debate at Georgetown University, a Jesuit Catholic university, the oldest in the United States, where they announced that in the spirit of religious liberty and toleration, they were going to remove the crucifixes from every classroom in Georgetown. And it was a group of Jewish students who said, "Don't do that. Don't do that, okay? One of the reasons our folks sent us here is because it's Catholic, and they appreciate that dimension and that climate that animates everything that you do." It's interesting, Michael, and here's where I look to some of you, because many of you are involved in research, people like Saul. I'm wondering now if in what we see in the excellent reports coming out from people like Diane Ravitch, who's talking about the charter schools, and I couldn't even mention those. There's so much that I had to cut out from my talk. You wonder if it's even becoming statistically obvious that one of the things that makes Catholic schools work happens to be the religious dimension. All right? That you've got a climate that's by its nature speaks about the soul, the heart, the spirit, morality, character, prayer, fidelity, biblical tradition. You wonder if that's part of the genius. In another way, I often wonder if part of the genius and effectiveness of Catholic schools is that, darn it, we have to scrimp for every single dime we got. And if that's one of the reasons that we're strong, because the people that send their kids there are sacrificing. So there's an investment. There's a buy-in. So funny enough, I wonder if scholarship would show what I think we've all got a hunch about, that two things that are often thought of to be deficits about Catholic schools, namely, as Michael mentioned, the strong religious identification in the area that I just brought up, the financial sacrifice called for, as a matter of fact, are reasons for their genius and their success. I don't know. I'm hoping maybe there's studies that'll help us understand that. Oh, thanks.
Ed Thompson with the Ayn Rand Institute. Are you considering charter schools as a solution to the financial problem, or is there a separation issue there?
Ed, I would say the whole charter school issue is a hot one for us as Catholics today. In some ways, there's an appeal to them. In other ways, we're saying, well, there's still government schools, and we still can't have religion in them. I would say in some what you might call desperate situations, and you perhaps might be familiar with Washington, D.C., where, unfortunately, our Congress couldn't see it possible to continue the $18 million a year subsidy to 8 Catholic inner city schools, meaning that most of them could no longer stay open. The Archbishop there made the decision, let's try charter. Now, was this his first choice? No. He tried his darndest, and if he had his druthers, they'd still be Catholic schools. He knew that odds are they were going to have to close, so he said, let's go with charter, and let's look into some creative alternatives such that the religious formation that we provide, while unable to go on during the day, could be provided before or after school. Whether that's going to work or not, Ed, I don't know. I would say this. I personally, this is more gut than statistics or scholarly research, I worry that if we, again, charter schools, I'm glad, excellent, bravo, hallelujah, if I mean what I say and that competition is a good thing, well then bring on, the more the merrier. But I worry that if I, as a Catholic leader, said, oh, thanks be to God, we got charter schools now, we don't have to be as aggressive and energetic in the promotion of our own schools, I think that's going to send up a flare that we're giving in and we're throwing up the towel. And that's the last message I want to give. If I've accomplished anything today, is what I'm saying is we've just begun to fight. So, Saul, did I quote you all right? Okay.
I hope you don't mind if I make a slight correction.
I would welcome it.
And a piece of advice.
I would welcome it.
I know the data pretty well. You're not slipping. There may be some schools that have had a little problem. But all the data indicates that Catholic schools are still scoring about, on the average, 10 points higher on the test.
Thank you. Saul, I couldn't hear you. Would you say that again? No.
But more important, Catholic schools are doing it with grace. That is, they're not gaming the test. They're not cheating on the test. They don't seem to care that much about the test. And it goes to the point that you made about the essential, the real inspiration of Catholic schools, which is about the whole child and mind, body, and soul. And God forbid the day that you start trying to compete by gaming tests, by cheating on tests. That's not the kind of competition we would want to see. And it would desperately affect that mission.
And would be antithetical to everything we stand for. Saul, those are the kind of corrections I love. Thank you. Thank you.
Hello, Gail Robinson from Gotham Gazette. Just a question about getting back to charter schools for a second, if we might. I know that some people have said that charter schools might be cutting into your audience because many of them do offer fairly traditional education, uniforms. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could respond to that and say how you would meet that challenge.
Sure. It's early enough. It's too early for us to know that, Gail. Is it Gail? It's too early for us to know that statistically. But I need to be forthright with you. Yes, that is a fear. We fear that they might cut into our people that would otherwise choose a Catholic school. Having said that, I think it is the Catholic posture, and a sincere one, and I hope an enlightened one, that welcome. We need all the help we can get in this most noble initiative of the education of our children, our most precious treasure, and the more the merrier. And one of the things we've been saying from the beginning is parental rights in education, and that competition is a darn good thing for the education of our children. So if this is a new initiative, bring it in. What are we going to do? We do know that in areas like Harlem, we're a little afraid, where charter schools, thanks be to God, are blossoming. we've seen some enrollments go down. Is that true, Dr. McNiff? So we're selfishly afraid there. And sometimes we say, well, look, as long as there's good quality education going on, hallelujah. On the other hand, I'm just confident that if we keep doing what we have been doing well for two millennia, well, the truth will set you free, all right? And that it's going to be seen over and over again, as I hinted at a couple minutes ago, that maybe, just maybe, there's something to this religious dimension of a school that enhances a pedagogical environment. And that if that's the case, and I'm kind of confident that it is, well, then we don't have anything to be afraid of. And Catholic schools are still going to come across as a quality product, well worth investment and sacrifice. I'm hoping, Gail.
Yes, sir.
Well, first, I want to tell you how impressed I am with your presentation. I'm not a Catholic, but I'm actually recovering lawyer/mediator who wants to help, who believes in education, and the great thing you're doing in the Catholic schools is you have the right pedagogy. You are doing what's right, and it's been proven to be better than the public schools, who doesn't, unfortunately, the public schools don't have the right pedagogy.
Thank you.
My challenge, and I read your article in today's Post, Facing the Catholic School Challenge, and here's the good news is you get it, okay? You know how to teach, how children learn, et cetera. My challenge is you talk about soul, mind, and body, okay? And no one can disagree with all the importance of all those three. But you get it right on the mind, and the problem is, and I want to pick up on what Ed said and what Saul said. And there's something wrong with the fact that you cannot be supported by, like, all the other charter schools, because you not all charter schools are good. There's the good ones, and my question is this. Picking up on, I think it was you said your colleague in Washington that said, mm-hmm. Why can't we become more secular in our education and do the Catholicism and mm-hmm. the all those things after school? When I went to school, Catholicism was after school, mm-hmm. okay? My question is, why would you not pick up on that? Because you could do a wonderful thing for all the students if you would basically become secular in the education and handle the, you know, the soul and body and the Catholicism
sure.
after school.
You make an excellent point. You're wondering if we could provide a service by kind of trying a new model, where I guess the problem that we'd have is that could that be done, and there's an obvious attraction to it, the way you articulated it, could that be done without compromising that holistic, integrated approach to education that I spoke about at the beginning that was purpose number one of Catholic education? In other words, for a Catholic school would show in every breath that is taken that one's faith, one's values, one's inherent dignity as a child of God affects everything you say and do. It affects your approach to art. It affects your approach to music. It affects your approach to science. So if we then said, oh, but that's got to be saved for after school, are we then diluting the very nature of Catholic education that challenges us to be holistic and integrated? Now, maybe I'm making too much out about it, and maybe you got a point that somebody somewhere ought to say, well, let's try it somewhere and see if it works. But
we have time for one last question. I'd like to recognize you have with us a distinguished author, and
Hi, Pat. How are you? I didn't know you were here. I would have been nervous.
Nothing to get nervous about. Two quick points. The Bishop of Salina, Kansas, went to University of Kansas to a great books program. It's called Antiquities, which was eventually closed down because too many of the graduates were converted to Catholicism. And that's true. The point being, the whole thing about charter schools and whatever, I do think that there's a way in which a classical curriculum, a really truly classical curriculum, is intrinsically Catholic, mm-hmm. Transformation of the ancient world into Christianity and so on, such that you could support more of a Catholic orientation. It's not a Catholic school, and it suffers from some shortcomings, but what has happened is that some charter schools have simply converted to, some Catholic schools have simply converted to regular public schools, which is couldn't be more different.
True. Right?
So yeah. I think there is a kind of middle ground that is possible. Second point is I'm so glad you wore Bishop used Dagger John's cross because yes. He was such a fierce warrior.
I might have to sell it to support some of our Catholic city schools.
But. Yeah, we could.
Is do anybody I hear from, a bit? No, never mind. I don't.
Is there a St. Southby's Catholic? But it seemed to me in doing research for my book and traveling around that. What has been lost is exactly what you've been talking about, is that sort of fierce passion to overcome problems. It kind of got lost over the last few decades. I mean, if you went back to 1840 when Bishop Hughes was battling, the problems were much greater than we face today.
Yeah.
And then they went out and built everything.
You bet. That's right? When we started the greatest private education system the world has mm-hmm. ever known.
So then we got to 1965, at the height of all our money and power, and everything fell apart.
And it collapsed.
Which doesn't make a lot of sense. So I think it's in traveling around, I got to see that there are a lot of solutions. There are more than enough resources in the Catholic world. I think it's really a matter of pulling it all together.
Yes.
But that belief, passion, and leadership hasn't been there. But at the same token, if you go to a diocese or a school or an area where it is there, it happens. You know, Wichita has free Catholic schools. I mean, it's. So it's a general proposition, I think.
Yeah. Pat, you make eminent sense. One of the most noted Catholic sociologists in the country, who's not well today, who's usually not quoted in support of what you might call traditional Catholic causes, Father Andrew Greeley, says that the major problem in Catholic schools today is that priests and bishops have lost their nerve. We've lost our nerve in promoting them. We've become shy. We're afraid of maybe offending some people who might not agree with us. And he said it's just plain stupid, which is his word. Here you've got something that works, that is brilliant, that is the envy of the world, and we're letting it collapse in front of us instead of standing up and saying no. The reason it's great is because of the sacrifice and the dare of those who went ahead of us, who, as Pat pointed out, had far less resources than we do. And we can't let it go. We've got to even strengthen and expand it. So that's a good line in which to end, isn't it? Thank you. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. My honor. Thanks. Well done. Think you did all right, Larry? Is that okay?
I think it is clear how fortunate we are to believe in the power of ideas.
Supply the common sense and the fresh thinking of the Manhattan Institute.